Chapter 19. Life is not fair. If you are the discriminating reader that I think you are, you picked up this book, after all, then you should have figured this out. There are very few aspects about life that are in any way fair. It isn't fair that some people are rich and others are poor. It isn't fair that I'm rambling like this instead of continuing the climax of the story. It isn't fair that I'm so outrageously handsome while most people are simply ordinary. It isn't fair that diphthong gets to be such an awesome-sounding word, yet has to mean something relatively unawesome. No, life is not fair. It is, however, funny. The only thing you can do is laugh at it. Some days you have to sit in your boring chair sipping warm cocoa. Other days you get to blast your way out of a pit in the ground and then run off to fight a half-metal monster who is holding your friend's mother captive. Other days you need to dress like a green hamster and dance around in circles while people throw pomegranates at you. Don't ask. There are two lessons I think one should learn from this book. The second one I'll blather on about in the next chapter. But the first one, and perhaps more interesting one, is this. Please remember to laugh. It's good for you. Plus, while you're laughing, it's easier for me to hit you with a pomegranate. Laugh when good things happen. Laugh when bad things happen. Laugh when life is so plain boring that you can't find anything amusing about it beyond the fact that it's so utterly unamusing. Laugh when books come to a close, even if the endings aren't happy. This isn't part of the plan, I thought desperately as I dashed back into the room. What's the point of having a plan if people don't follow it? Killaman activated the Frostbringer's lens, blasting it toward Bastille. She dropped her pack and whipped up her dagger, slicing it directly through the icy beam. The dagger shattered, and her hand turned blue. But she blocked the ray long enough to get inside Killaman's reach, and she delivered a solid blow to his stomach with her other hand. Killaman let out an oof of pain and stumbled backward. Angered, he slammed his sword down toward Bastille. Somehow she got out of the way, and the sword hit the ground with a harsh sound. "She's so quick," I thought. She was already around to Killaman's side and delivered a powerful kick to his ribs. Although it didn't look like he enjoyed the blow, he didn't react as much as I would have thought a regular person would. He was part alivened. Regular weapons couldn't kill this creature. That was a job for an oculator. As I grew close, Killaman spun, slamming his shoulder into Bastille's chest. The blow threw her backward to the ground, and Killaman laughed, then raised the Frostbringer's lens, pointing it directly at her. "No!" I yelled. The only thing I had, however, was the grappler's glass boot, so I threw it. The lens began to glow. For once in my life, however, my aim was true, and the boot hit the lens square on and locked into place. When the lens went off, ice formed in a large block around the shoe, weighing it down, but also filling the boot itself, making it impossible to reach inside and turn it off. Killaman cursed, shaking his hand. As he did so, I realized that I still had a hold of the tripwire tied to the boot. Thinking that I'd be able to pull the Frostbringer's lens to myself, I yanked on the wire. I hadn't stopped to think that Killaman might yank back, and he was a lot stronger than I was. His pull caused the wire to bite into my hands as it yanked me off my feet. I cried out, hitting the ground, and my talent proactively broke the wire before Killaman could pull me any farther toward him. I looked up, dazed, 10 feet of wire still wrapped around my hands. Killaman freed his hand from the frozen lens boot combination, and he tossed both aside. Bastille was climbing to her feet. Without her jacket, which had broken when the Dragonaut crashed, she couldn't take much more punishment than a regular person, and Killaman had hit her square on with a metal shoulder. It was a wonder she could even walk. Killaman hefted the Kristen blade in two hands, then smiled at us. He didn't seem to be at all threatened. That attitude, however, seemed to make Bastille even more determined. Despite my yelled warning, she charged the monster again. "And she calls us Smedry's crazy," I thought with frustration, pushing myself to my feet. As Kilimon raised his weapon to swing at Bastille, I slammed my hand to the ground and released the breaking talent. The floor cracked. There was an awesome, deafening sound as rocks shattered and sections of floor became rubble. Kilimon idly stepped to the side, raising a metallic eyebrow at the rift that appeared behind him.
"What exactly was that supposed to do?"
it asked, glancing at me.
"It was supposed to make you stumble," I said.
"But it'll work as a distraction, too." At that moment, Bastille tackled him. Kilimon yelled, falling to the ground, the Kristen blade sliding from his grip. As he hit, something fell from one of his pockets and skidded across the floor. My translator's lenses. I cried out, dashing toward them. From behind, I could hear Bastille grunting as she snatched the Kristen blade. Kilimon, however, was just too strong. He grabbed her foot with a metal bolt hand, then threw her to the side, causing her to drop the sword. She hit the wall with a terrible thud. I spun in alarm. Bastille slid to the ground. She looked dazed. Her forehead was bleeding from a cut, and one of her hands was still blue from the blast of frost. She favored her side and grimaced as she tried, then failed to stand. She seemed to be in really bad shape. Kilimon stood up, then recovered the Kristen blade. He shook his head, as if to clear it, and with his flesh hand, he pulled out another lens. The Voidstormer's lens. The one that sucked things toward him. He pointed the lens toward Bastille. She groaned as she began to slide across the floor toward him, unable to even stand. Kilimon raised the sword. I dived for the translator's lenses, which had skidded across the floor to rest beside one of the scroll-covered walls. I knelt beside the lenses, hurriedly grabbing them.
"Ha," Kilimon said. "You'd fetch those lenses even as I kill your friend. I thought that Smedries were supposed to be bold and honorable. We can see what happens to your grand ideals once real danger is near."
I knelt there for a moment, my back to Kilimon, translator's lenses in my fingers. I knew I couldn't let him have them, not even to save my life or Bastille's. I glanced over my shoulder. Bastille came to a rest in front of Kilimon. She had her eyes closed and barely seemed to be breathing. He raised her mother's sword to kill her. This is the part I've been warning you about. The part I know you're not going to like. I'm sorry. I dashed away, making for the exit of the room. Kilimon laughed even more loudly.
I knew it.
At that moment, in my haste, I tripped. I stumbled on the uneven ground and fell face down, the translator's lenses sliding from my fingers and hitting the stone floor. They tumbled away.
No!
I yelled.
Aha, Kilimon said,
then spun his Voidstormer's lens toward the fallen translator's lenses. They whipped off the floor and flew toward him. I watched the lenses go, meeting Kilimon's eyes. One human, one glass, as he exulted in his victory. Then I smiled. I think it was about that moment when he noticed the tripwire tied around the frame of the translator's lenses, which flew through the air toward him. A thin wire, nearly invisible, it stretched from the spectacles to a place across the room, the place where I'd been kneeling by the wall a moment before, the place where I'd tied the other end of the tripwire to one of the scrolls. Kilimon caught the lenses. The tripwire pulled taut. The scroll popped off its shelf, falling to the ground. The librarian monster's eyes opened wide, and his mouth gaped in shock. The translator's lenses fell to the ground in front of him. Immediately, the curator surrounded Kilimon.
"You have taken a book," one cried.
"No," Kilimon said, stepping back. "It was an accident."
"You signed no contract," another said, skull face smiling. "Yet you took a book. Your soul is ours."
"No."
I shuddered at the pain in that voice.
Hillman reached toward me, furious. But it was too late. A fire grew from nothing at his feet. It burned around him, and he screamed again.
"You will fall, Smedri. The librarians will have your blood. It will be spilt on an altar to make the very lenses we'll use destroy your kingdoms. Break that which you love and enslave those who follow you. You may have beaten me, but you will fall."
I shivered. The fires consumed Kilimin, and I had to shield my eyes against the bright light. And then it was gone. I blinked, clearing the afterimage from my eyes, and saw a new curator, one with only half of a skull, hovering where Kilimin had stood. A group of discarded nuts, bolts, gears, and springs were scattered on the ground. The half-skull curator hovered over to the side of the room, carefully replacing the scroll that had been pulled free. I ignored it. There were more important things to worry about.
"Bastille," I said, rushing over to her.
There was blood on her lips, and she seemed so bruised and battered. I knelt beside her. She groaned softly. I gulped.
"Nice trick," she whispered, "with the tripwire."
"Thanks." She coughed, then spit up some blood.
"By the first sands," I thought with a sudden stab of fear. "No, this can't be happening." "Bastille, I
suddenly found tears in my eyes. "I wasn't fast enough or smart enough. I'm sorry."
"What are you blathering about?"
I blinked. "Well, you look kind of bad, and..."
"Shut up and help me to my feet," she said, stumbling to her knees.
I stared at her.
"What?" she said. "It's not like I'm dying or anything. I just broke a few ribs and bit my tongue. Shattering glass, Smedri, do you have to be so melodramatic all the time?"
With that, she stretched, grimaced, and stumbled over to pick up the fallen Kristen sword. I got to my feet, feeling relieved and a little foolish. I went over and carefully untied the translator's lenses from the tripwire, then slid them into their pocket, where they belonged. To the side, I could see Kaz peek into the room, apparently having returned from depositing Drow Lin in Australia somewhere safe. He smiled broadly when he saw me and Bastille, then rushed into the room.
"Alcatraz, kid, I can't believe you're still alive!"
"I know," I said. I thought for sure one of us was going to die. "You know, if I ever write my memoirs, this section is going to seem really boring because nobody was narratively dynamic enough to get themselves killed." Bastille snorted, joining us, holding one of her arms close to her side.
"That's real inspiring, Smedri."
"You're the one who stopped following the plan," I said.
"What? Kilimin was faster than you. How exactly were you planning to keep him from chasing you down as you ran?"
"I'm not sure," I admitted. Kaz just laughed.
"What happened to Kilimin anyway?"
I pointed toward the curator with half of a skull.
"He's doing a little bit of soul-searching," I said.
"You could say that watching over these books is his sole responsibility now. He'll probably enjoy the solitary lifestyle."
"Can I hit him?" Bastille asked flatly.
I smiled, then noticed something on the ground. I picked it up. A single yellow lens.
"What's that?"
"Tracker's lens," I said. "Kilimin's. It had been in the pouch with Drowlin's flesh stone."
"My mother," Bastille said. "How is she?"
"I'm fine," Drowlin's voice said. We spun to find her standing beside a sheepish Australia in the doorway. "Fine" was a stretch. Drowlin still looked pale, like someone who had been sick for far too long. Yet her step was steady as she walked into the room and joined us.
"Lord Smedri," she said, going down on one knee, "I've failed you."
"Nonsense," I said.
"The librarian of the Scrivener's Bones captured me," she said. "I was caught in a trap, tied up, and he was able to take me without any trouble. I have shamed my order.
I rolled my eyes. The rest of us got caught in curator traps, too. We were just lucky enough to wiggle out of them before Killaman found us. Drowlin still bowed her head. On the back of her neck, I caught sight of a sparkling crystal. Her flesh stone replaced. "Get up and stop apologizing," I said. "I'm serious. You did well. You forced a confrontation with Killaman, and we won that confrontation. So consider yourself part of our victory." Drowlin stood up, though she didn't appear appeased. She fell into her traditional parade rest stance, looking straight ahead. "As you wish, Lord Smedri."
"Mother," Bastille said.
Drowlin looked down.
"Here," Bastille said, holding up the Kristen blade.
I blinked in shock. For some reason, I'd been expecting Bastille to keep that. Drowlin hesitated for a moment, then took the sword.
"Thank you," she said,
then sheathed it on her back.
"What are your plans now, Lord Smedri?"
"I'm not sure yet," I said.
"Then I will set up a perimeter around this room."
Drowlin bowed to me, then walked over to the entrance and took up a guard position. Bastille moved toward the other entrance, but I grabbed her arm.
"That woman should be begging for your forgiveness."
"Why?" Bastille asked.
"You're in so much trouble because you lost your sword," I said. "Well, Drowlin didn't do much better now, did she?"
"But she got hers back."
"So?"
"So, she didn't break it."
"Only because of us."
"No," Bastille said.
"Because of you, Alcatraz. Killaman defeated me, just like the Elivant in the downtown library did. You had to save me both times."
"I..." Bastille carefully removed my hand from her arm.
"I appreciate it, Smedri. I really do. I'd be dead several times over if it wasn't for you."
With that, she walked away. Never before had a thank you seemed so despondent to my ears. "Things aren't going to get fixed that easily," I thought. "Bastille still considers herself a failure. We're going to have to do something about that."
"You going to destroy that, kid?" Kaz asked.
I glanced down, realizing that I still had Killaman's tracker's lens in my fingers.
"It's very dark oculary," Kaz said, rubbing his chin. "Blood-forged lenses are bad business."
"We should destroy it, then," I said.
"At least turn it over to someone who knows what to do with it." I trailed off.
"Obviously."
"What?"
Kaz asked. I didn't answer. I'd caught something through the tracker's lens. I held it up to my eye and was surprised to see footprints on the ground. There were lots of them, of course. Mine, Bastille's, even Killaman's. Though those were fading quickly, since I didn't know him well. More important, however, I saw three sets of footprints that were very distinct. All led toward a small, inconspicuous door on the far side of the room. One set of footprints was Grandpa Smedri's. Another set of yellowish-black ones belonged to my mother. The final set, a blazing red-white, was undoubtedly that of my father. All went through the doorway, but there were no sets leading back out. "Hey," I said, turning to the nearest curator. "What's through that door?"
"That's where we keep the possessions of those who have been turned into curators," the creature said in a raspy voice.
Indeed, I saw several curators cleaning up the remnants of Killaman's transformation, the bits of metal and the clothing he had been wearing. I lowered the tracker's lens. "Come on," I said to the others. "We almost forgot the reason why we came here in the first place."
"And what was that reason again?" Kaz asked.
I pointed at the door.
"To find out what's on the other side of that."